Let's go ahead and start. This is the Vanguard Academy board meeting for Tuesday, January 28th, 2020. First one of the year. Let's start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we'll start with a roll call. We'll go around the table. This is Kent Johnson, board chair.
Kim Mangum, board member.
Grace Mitchell, treasurer.
Scott Kingston, board member.
Eric Freeman, board member.
Darren Jenkins, board member.
Johnny Jenkins, school counselor.
Marie Evans, assessment and operations.
Stephanie Evans, minute taker.
Suzanne Owen, director.
Joy Palmer, curriculum director.
Okay, and then before we get started, we have had a request, and we probably should have done this a long time ago to make our board meetings a little bit more efficient. And so we're actually going to try to keep to the time limits. So we'll have a timer. One of the ideas that we want to put across is the idea as we go through the reports, the recommendation, and we can discuss it if we want to, is to bring as your report two positive items that you have about your area or that that report, and then two challenges you might have, and then just go from there, and we can kind of leave it at that. If there's things to present, I would say present them, get them. Most present items we present, you can send out an email, and we can review it and then refer to it. And of course, as much discussion as we want, I don't want to stop any discussion from board members, but as far as the presenters, we'd like to try to keep that in a timely manner. At that, we'll start with the first item on the agenda is public comments. We'll limit those to 3 minutes. Do you have any public comments we want to start with?
Very, very quick. Thank you.
Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yes, I'm from Lloyd Wright and president of PTSO at Vanguard. And I'm Kat Severkamp, several parents have contacted me about the backpack policy in which backpacks are no longer allowed in class. I understand backpacks have been a tool students have been using to carry things that are disruption in teacher classes, such as toys and candies, etc., as well as a place to hide stolen items. And I understand that this is one of the reasons backpacks have been banned in class, but I wonder if there is a better way to handle these problems. Backpacks can actually be a very valuable tool in the student's academic pathway, and those who have already completed high school and college know the need and the value of a backpack, and so a large extreme backpack can help you make a difference in whether your success in class by enabling you to be a better prepared student. And preparation can sometimes be the only difference between failure and success. Now, let's take, for example, David and Goliath. When the Israelites were threatened by the Philistine giant named Goliath, they had David, son of Jesse, go and choose him 5 stones out of the brook and put him in a shepherd's bag, which he had. And David was prepared because he was able to carry that sling and stones in his bag. He had the necessary tools with him to slay Goliath. For students, most of their challenging classes are going to feel like Goliath, and giving them a backpack full of necessary supplies can help them conquer that subject. So I would say rather than banning backpacks, maybe we should clear the water at the head of the fountain by dealing with the root of the problem, which is the lack of training. Implementing training programs for both students and teachers will be more effective as a long-term solution. And based on the problems with backpacks, students seem to lack training and respect, self-control, responsibility, and even the knowledge of the proper uses and places for a backpack. An ongoing training program for the students about respect of people and property, if consistently taught throughout the year, will train the students' hearts in a way that will negate the need for teachers having to police them in all themes. A school-wide campaign about a person's civic duty to be an honest and respectful member of society will better the lives of not only every person in the school, but will have a lasting positive impact on our state and our country by creating respectful and honest citizens. And then also, I would additionally say that a training program instructing teachers in classroom management and respect for students will be especially helpful for teachers. I think our teachers are wonderful. They put their heart and soul into the classes. They work so hard, and they deserve to have a well-managed classroom. Well, let's give them tools to make sure that they can have that well-managed classroom through training. A teacher who has excellent control of their class doesn't seem to often have trouble with students disrupting the class with backpacks or any other thing for that matter. and clearly stated, consistently implemented procedures in the classroom, including the proper way to use and the appropriate place to store a backpack, will avoid trip hazards and lessen the misuse of backpacks. So I must say, before we throw the baby out with the bathwater on this backpack issue, wouldn't it make sense to try other and possibly more effective tactics to solve the problems experienced at the school? That's all I'm going to say on this, with the exception of the students gave me a petition that they drafted and signed. I'm going to go ahead and I don't know who would give that to you. And I thought you would like to have that. They asked me to give that to the school, so I'm assuming this is the appropriate place.
Yeah, well,
that's all I have to say.
So maybe what we've been asked, or it's been requested, if we feel like it's appropriate, we'll take the backpack policy vote and move it up to now, to the first of the item for agenda, since you're here. And as we open up for discussion, if there's any questions anybody has, go to Director View, Director Suzanne, anybody that has. So let's go ahead and, if that's okay with the board. We'll take item number seven, move it to current item, and I'll open that up for discussion or any questions on it. The presenter is Grace. I'll let you start if you would like.
Yeah. We have had several, like Lori said, we have had several parents and students come and requested that privilege be given back to them. I did really like the idea that Kathleen and Suzanne proposed, where the students took responsibility for that through some sort of contract. And anyway, I do feel like that on this backpack policy, I realize that you do have issues that are you're afraid of, but I don't think that the safety and the distractions are really the problem of the backpack. I think it is teaching the kids character values. I think it's teaching the kids respect. I think it's teaching the kids responsibility and teaching classroom management skills. And so I don't believe it's kind of like the tail wagging the dog. I don't believe the backpack is the problem. I believe it's a deeper rooted problem.
Do we have a copy of the proposed policy? Has there everyone had a chance to review that?
I know they've been.
Oh, there we go. Good. Everybody has. Everyone had a chance to review that?
There actually was an updated one that was a little bit more concise and and it's a little bit more simplified. It was in the later, But
that's the last one.
I feel like that the backpack, it can be a really good tool for the kids. I feel like that not only can it be a study skills tool or a study educational tool, but I feel like that one of the things that was mentioned is they were afraid of scoliosis. But I feel like if the backpack is worn correctly, it actually gives that strength to the back. When the kids wear those backpacks, it's like taking the exercise that they're supposed to have for the day and getting about 30% of that exercise in, because it's a weighted backpack if it's done right and carried the right way. So I feel like that there's many benefits of having the backpack. I feel like the kids would benefit from getting that privilege back.
Any other discussions, any questions on the policy enforcement or?
I have a question. How long has it been taken away?
Has there been a lot of practice, or is it mostly just a few of the kids in the classes? Like, is it pretty much a lot of the kids are abusing that privilege, or is it just been a few?
Not a lot, but there are, a few problems. The biggest problem really is that the hallways are quite narrow when you've got a whole bunch of kids going through, and so it just adds to that. We've had a teacher trip over a backpack, who was expecting. We have the backpacks that are stowed around the building, and they continue to be stowed, but not nearly as many out and about as were before.
What's happening with the back, with not allowing backpacks in the classroom? Is that no backpacks in the school?
No, it's just no backpacks in the classroom.
So but you still have the same problem with them carrying them in the halls or getting left around, or does that, did that change?
Yeah, because they do go get them for lunch. And that's one of the problems too, is because they take them in so that they can, a lot of them want to get extra pieces of fruit and stone in the backpacks for later. It really, you know, many teachers have just said that it just makes it hard to navigate around the rooms. A lot of teachers have put places in the room where the kids can come in and put their backpacks down when they walk in and then go to class. I mean, the choir class, for instance. There's been a concern raised about these classrooms with the wiring and the microphones, because sometimes the backpacks are shoved under the tables, and we've got, and it's not just from backpacks, but we've got some computers upstairs as well that sometimes the backpacks have shut down the computer and lost the kids' work, and they start over again. But, you know, it's just mostly, like I say, just the congestion, the tripping hazard, the problems with them trying to get in and out, carrying snacks and toys and devices and whatever into the classroom.
It'd be nice to let each teacher, even if they do allow backpacks to the side, if they want to allow them at their desk, or just have a place to check them in when they come into a classroom.
And that's what I would recommend,
is
that
a lot of problems too.
That the teacher still has that autonomy to say, you know, if they're going to take them there, then they have to place them somewhere or whatever, use them in a way that is going to try to relieve that congestion.
Yeah. If the teachers did that, I think it wouldn't be an issue whether or not they had them in the class. I don't know if it's a real big issue in the halls or not, but I'm not sure if not allowing them in the class would eliminate the congestion in the halls.
I think if we feel like we have any more discussion on the voting items, I don't want to ever quote you a vote or discussion on it.
The other point is that you would have the student sign a contract saying that they will uphold the conduct of the backpack.
That's not in policy, but it could be a procedure.
It seems to me like when I read this, it doesn't identify all the issues that we've talked about. I'm thinking a contract that defined all of the issues, that people understood what the issues were and what they had to deal with, then they know what they're shooting at.
And I think that comes with setting down expectations. And with the expectations, then it gives the students the opportunity to be responsible for their actions, because they know exactly what they're supposed to be doing.
I always hated it when one or two kids in the class did something wrong, the whole class gets punished for it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a thing I thought with the backpacks.
So then, as we, to make that contract would be a procedure, then we would put it on open points for this?
Yeah, we can actually do that.
And then we would vote on this policy.
If we feel like we're prepared, all we need is a motion.
One more comment. You have a lot of students who have signed a petition. Could they be challenged to identify what they understand the problems to be, and then that would go into the contract? Maybe the problems can be identified by the students and the teachers, and then come together to a committee to decide what to do.
Yeah. And I like the idea of the energy involved in this. I don't like the tail ever wagging the dog, but I think I like the idea to get them involved and say, what can you do for us to make this work, whatever we need to do. And I think that would be a good part of the open point.
Okay.
And we could present that to the students. We've got a lot of them asked to help us.
So is the open point for the backpack policy for Grace on the contract?
Who wants to take that on?
On that contract? Is that
to get the
because whoever, we could put it on the governance committee if you want, and just say we're going to come up with a policy that
or
the procedure.
Yeah, contract.
That says this is what we would allow, the conditions we would allow a backpack to be used in the school.
I think that's good.
And we can place the contract.
So just put on the governance committee?
So would that mean then, just let me clarify, so if the board were to approve the backpack policy, would that be with the provision that a student, in order to carry that backpack to class, would have to sign that agreement? Would the region agree to that?
I think so.
Okay. So it would be, basically, they would apply for the privilege of taking it, and if they don't have that agreement signed, then they're not.
I think it would be a really good idea.
And I'd have to figure out how to figure out who has signed it.
You put a sticker on their back.
Parent student compact. We have a parent student compact. We can include it in there in future years. So that's has it burned in place.
Yeah. And so that I think we could add that
to the
policy and say in lieu of a contract, signed contract, then that would allow that to happen. So, so any more discussion? Motion to proceed, motion to.
So we already voted on it now? Need a motion to vote on?
If we feel like it as a board.
So we need a motion to vote on the backpack policy with the intentions that we have in future contract. Do we need that included, or should we just vote?
Yeah, no, that's good.
That's good.
I think that's a good addition to it.
Mm-hmm. I'll second.
Thanks. So all in favor of approving the backpack policy contingent upon a student contract that would allow each student to sign it, vote yes.
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 Any opposed, say no. The backpack policy has been approved in contingent of coming up with a contract for the students to sign. So we'll move on to the next item. We'll go to the minutes. And thank you for coming. Now, last time, our minutes, if you look at the very bottom as you review them, we ended at 8:22. So that means we have 30 minutes to finish this one. So go ahead and we'll review the minutes for approval. All in favor of approving the minutes from last time, say yes.
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 All opposed, say no. The minutes have been approved. Then we'll go on to the action items. The first item is to come up with anything that the school has had concerning excellence in everything we do. Does anybody? I'm sure we have a ton of them. Especially, I would recommend bringing up the report card.
The what?
The school report card.
From the state. Yeah, and I do have that if you want to.
Yeah.
This, I should preface by saying it's not public knowledge yet. It's kind of sequestered information until February 14th.
Did you send an email on this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I see that. I couldn't remember.
So the front page shows the levels we in each category, and then the pages behind kind of go into the detail of some of that.
So basically we had commendable on achievement, exemplary on growth, exemplary on post-secondary readiness.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the top two things we would say with the best two things out of it? And then what are the two ones we need to work on?
Our growth was phenomenal, and we also did a really good job with our lowest 25%. So they track that lowest 25% individual in aside from the overall school. And we did really well on both those areas.
They track it by student.
So they take your lowest 25% and see how they do from year to year, and ours is did
compared
quite
well. To
themselves.
Also growth means.
So I sent out a video, I'm not sure if you got that in your email, that the state created that explains growth, and it's compared to the kids that scored the same as them the previous year. And so if they, so they take the group of their peers that scored the same the previous year and the following year, if they score as well or better than 40% of their group, then they got their growth. If they didn't, then they didn't.
So that's a comparison to peers across the whole state.
Peers that scored the same as them in the same test the previous year.
So is it that growth from a 7th grader to an 8th grader they've grown?
Mm-hmm.
Not that the kids have grown from 7th to 8th and they've improved in their like math skills, just how far they've grown from 7th to 8th?
No, it's by subject. So
the
they measure
in... continue to grow at a high pace every single year?
Mm-hmm.
Once you grow, though, you're in a different category, and you're in a different group of students that you're comparing against these students now. So...
So is this saying that the science dropped 4.2%?
Mm-hmm. How far are we on it?
Minute 46 left for that
okay.
point, whatever that was.
So the two biggest opportunities for us here are where we need to improve.
We need to work on our science and English proficiency.
What is the readiness coursework that we dropped in? There. On the third page.
The readiness coursework shows what classwork students did to prepare them for post-secondary readiness. And we still scored 95.7. I could look into it in more detail and see what the specifics were on that.
Okay, we'll move on. The next item is to incorporate the work release program. I don't know if we've made any more progress on that.
I don't, but I'm aware of.
Okay, we'll leave that open. We also have getting a bid for the assembly hall exit. Have we done anything?
I think that's on your shoulders, right, Grace? What was that for you?
The bid for the new exit in the assembly hall.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, you're
so we'll push that out.
let's keep that up.
So, the next item is to make a proposed amendment to our charter, and I think we're still going through that process.
That has been started, but it's in progress.
Okay, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Just let me know if we're how critical the timeline is on it.
We're kind of a
little bit of that. Okay, we'll move to the next item. Like a yearly calendar, we haven't, we're still working on it. What do we?
It's not complete, but I have started to put the stuff in.
Good.
So if there's ever any months that you know we need to have something for a board meeting, you can give it to me and I'll add it in there.
Okay, we'll review that and possibly close it out next time. The last item is to identify adequate measurements. I don't know if we have any. I know we were going to put this in the top summary, and we have the comment that we'll close this out when it's in the top summary.
Yeah.
I think that having studies is going to help with that.
And I know that our team was discussing this with the scheduling team. They talked about the difference between Avid elective and our leadership classes and trying to really come up with a clear definition or distinction
between what is a leadership class, and it may look different at a junior high level versus a high school level. Right now, we've implemented AVID curriculum into our leadership classes, but it's kind of just parts and pieces of AVID. But in order to be an AVID school, it's my understanding we do need to offer and hold elective classes, the AVID elective, which would be the full AVID curriculum. And so I asked, what's the difference between a leadership class, which is using the AVID curriculum, and an AVID elective class? So that's part of what they're working on now, is what creates the distinction between the two, so that there's not necessarily overlapping. But from what they've said, then the leadership is kind of that overarching, they use the AVID strategies, but the AVID elective is targeting those students who really need that extra support and more intensive studies within using those AVID strategies. So that's kind of where we are with that.
Okay, that's the end of our open items. Any questions? Anything we need to add to this list? We did add one item for next time, so we'll move on to the director's report and turn the time over to Suzanne and Kathleen.
Okay, I'm just going to do two positives, two challenges. So one positive is we are working with the state to provide breakfast for our students. And based upon our number of free and reduced lunch students, they have said that those numbers will allow us to serve breakfast to every student at Vanguard free of charge. And so we've gotten the clearance to do that, but then the other lady that was over the program, who was on vacation at the time we got the clearance, just sent us an email today and said that we need to go through a couple of trainings and she needs to review it and whatnot. So I did ask Dawn, what does that mean? She's going to check with her tomorrow to find out, does that mean that we have to delay the service of lunch? Does that mean that we can start that process, assuming that we'll be accepted to be able to turn in a February claim? And so we'll be working with that. But our plan is that we would start next Monday morning, right at the beginning of February, and be able to serve the kids in order to make sure that we're, when we had breakfast last year, then there were very, very few students who ate. And it ended up just not financially, it wasn't, we just didn't get a good return on investment kind of thing. They said now that we can actually serve during the school day, as long as it occurs before, I think it's 10 o'clock in the morning. And so what we thought we would do is we would start with our high school students being served in the morning before school starts, and then our junior high students who all have leadership classes, either first or second period, would then be served during that class time. So it would take 5 to 10, actually closer to 10 minutes off of that class time to be able to serve them breakfast, but it would then be able to get every student who's present that day to be able to come in and get a meal. And that hopefully will help them so that they have that energy to get through the day. And so that's, you know, positive, I think. So we're hoping we can do that. Another positive that we have, and this is going to be a positive and a challenge all in one. We have just about finished up the enrollment process for next year. On the 31st it closes. We already have 93, actually I have to add three more to that. We have 96 students enrolled for next year. Here comes the negative. We have 48 seniors, which means that's how many slots will open up with our graduating seniors. We do have, according to the numbers that I received, we have 8 11th grade students planning to graduate early, 4 who are still wondering about it. If all of those do graduate early, it looks like that we'll have approximately 55 slots available. Again, we have 93 enrollees. Most of those enrollments are coming from our primary feeder school across the street, but we do have a few others that have been added to that. So we for sure will have to hold a lottery this year. We don't have enough slots at Vanguard to fill those spots. Now, the following year, and I'll just kind of pass these out, if you want to just kind of, Those numbers were, the last I updated them were in October of last year. So you can kind of see with our primary feeder school, that's where those numbers are coming from. And we oftentimes, I've looked at it and we've, in the past, not counting this year, we've had about a 3% attrition rate with students leaving to go to another school. We've had about a 3%, or no, it was closer to 15% early graduate rate. And so with those numbers, it would have put it down to where we might have been over-enrolled by about 15 students for next year. If those numbers hold true, right now, the last count, we have lost only 3 students to attrition, which again is a celebration, but it doesn't free up more slots for the students who are enrolling.
It's a good challenge to have.
Yeah.
It's a good challenge to have. And the following year, as you look at those numbers, you'll notice that then our senior class, minus the 8 to 11 kids that graduate early, is going to be closer to those number of enrollments. And that's one reason that we kind of, anyway, we didn't get things in there soon enough, but the question is, what do we do? When do we make a request to increase enrollment? And what is the validation for that increased request? And what would that increase look like? And what's the projected plan over time? So I've done the numbers a few times, and it, because our numbers in the lower grades are higher and closer to what we project that our primary feeder school would be sending us, then there are not huge numbers of slots that will be, and you know, the kids that will be left without a space.
So looking out into the future, at what point will this building not hold that capacity?
I think the building will hold the capacity for at least 10 years.
So over 1,000?
Well, yes, because when you look at the numbers as we're going through this, then again, we lose some to attrition, we lose some to early graduation, and we don't always get every student that is attending there. And when I say this building, I'm including the lower half that's currently being rented, leased to another entity. I'm including that in that thought.
Okay, time's up. Do we want to...
Plan of action would be to tell us how soon you have to apply the new T1s.
Yeah. It appears we need to apply
what it's going to take.
And I think so, because it's an 18-month process minimally. Okay. So if we're looking to try to increase enrollment for not next year but the following, we would need to have that proposal into them this spring.
So okay. I wonder if we got to do a rolling proposal that would take us out to 10 years and see.
And I have some of those numbers that I've just kind of been playing with, you know, trying to decide what percentage you put on for, oh, and they do allow, by the way, those numbers I gave you are allowing for that 3% over-enrollment that the state does allow for us. That's approximately 14 kids with our 450 enrollment. And I've kind of used those numbers saying, okay, if we lose such and such percent to attrition, such and such percent to early graduation, what does that look overall next year? Is a bubble year because of the low numbers in our senior class this year. The following year, there won't be that many.
So I guess the action item would be to come up with a recommendation that you have and then put it on the agenda for next time.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
To give it 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
To put
that on next time. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. Pretty much it.
Good. Let's go to the next item on the agenda is the Finance Committee, and turn that over to Grace.
Yeah, Catherine, do you have that?
Made it big, hopefully. We've been working on the director's summary as a...
I
many we've gotten here. It's kind of showing them. So the this is the side of the finance numbers. And then I guess I didn't pay attention to my double sided, and this is the part that we're working on for our the director's top summary, so that for the management reporting, it'll pull up all the departments. And so some of it's just kind of a placeholder, and there's not data in it yet. But as far as finance goes, then I've been working with Erin. Erin's set it up so that we can see the program. In the top left, you can see the overall categories kind of as a summary, and then you have the breakdown for each of the different programs to see where we are overall on the ones. So if you notice on the second row in the 5,000 category, you've got 5201 for cost size reduction and 5310 and 5333. Those are negative right now, but what we'll do is we'll watch them against the budgeted amount, and we'll stop allocating expenses there, and then the income will continue to come in through the remainder of the school year, and we'll just change the salaries and the different expenses that are coded there to a general program, so those will balance out to zero by the end of the year. So each of those programs in the that are not a general fund will be brought to zero, and that's the process each year, is to make sure that the goal of the legislature when they allocate the funds is the funds should be spent on this year's funds should be spent on this year's students. And so you use those program funds accordingly, and then at the end you zero them out. You either have to, most of the time we have more funds, like for concurrent enrollment, a lot of times because we have so many concurrent enrollment teachers now, then their salaries alone, we usually use that, and then sometimes we just have to move those out to just regular funds. So that's kind of the process. And so what happens if there is, so in the past we've had special ed funds carried over. That's starting to minimize as our special ed process in child fine has improved. And so that way we won't have to have deferred revenue from those different programs. But other than that, that's the summary sheet. And question?
What's the bottom right box?
So the bottom right are Vanguard specific funds that we've separated so that we can track them.
Okay. So the only recommendation I'd have is to be more clear on the headers, but I really like the font.
Okay. So yeah, the bottom right corner, they are all basically, the VAR is our general fund, but because we want to be able to track those separate categories so that we can give balances to those programs, and we have set it up that way to be able to better identify what funds they have available.
Good.
Do I like this format?
Yeah. This is a lot better than what we're using.
Probably the best I've seen.
That's really good.
Okay, any comments on any questions, any discussion on finance?
Why does it say vote?
What's
that?
Vote.
Finance?
Is that a typo?
Oh, is that a typo? Oops. Okay. Yeah.
It's not a
vote. I guess there is one more thing. Don't remember, I didn't see the agenda. The fee schedule, we needed to make sure that for this meeting, and we send out a notification to parents and make sure that this meeting and next meeting is the time for public comment.
We went to line 6. Is that what we're doing?
Sorry.
Yeah,
is it
line
on
6.
It's on there, yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I just was thinking about it because he's trying to finance, but I will wait.
That's discussion on that. So, good.
10 seconds.
Okay, so no vote. That was a typo. We'll go to item. The next item is number. On the agenda is the academic assessment committee report. I'll turn time over to Joan Marie.
So,
I'm
under the study
skills
grading policy. This is the
subject of
briefing.
That's the voting item?
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah.
No,
that's
better.
That's what I had. Yeah. So whoever gets to review this, I've changed the one part on the binder check to just say every other week, because I thought that's what the government screen said. Binder check, we don't have to be every other week. Basically, what the policy is asking for is that studies should be graded in every single class at Vanguard. For the last, since Vanguard started the first year, we've been trying to get study skills implemented school-wide, and it hasn't been happening in every single classroom. And so we feel like this is the way to get it into every single classroom, is to have it be 5% of the grade in every class. And so students would be graded once a term on setting up their binder, and getting the tabs for each, for their course, reading the syllabus, calendaring all the items on their planner. And three binders and digital binders would both be acceptable there. A binder check would happen every other week to make sure that students are putting their papers into the correct places. They'd be grading on taking their notes whenever they, the as needed. So if the teacher gives a lecture, they would be taking notes on that. They would read the chapter anytime there's reading material assigned, so that was also added as needed. And then there would be a weekly planner check in every class in the school where the kids fill out their planner for the next 2 weeks, take a picture, submit it to Canvas, and then the teacher grades it. And if the kid's not doing it well, they'll get in and give them support. Because one thing we find, we teach our kids what to do, but they sometimes need help in learning how to do it. And so they'll try, but they're not getting it. And so they need extra help from all of their teachers to learn how to schedule their assignments and study time and all that. So I did put a note at the bottom. So music, physical education, home ec are excluded from this because they don't really have that type of assignments. But also, I don't want a teacher adding assignments to this category without approval from the curriculum director, so that we don't have teachers go given, or already making this the dreaded category. It's supposed to be support. If the, these study skills are done correctly, and we have done a lot of training for the teachers on the study skills, especially the AVID that we did last May. So it'll help the, actually help the kids get everything done faster and better. So.
Do you want, so is one of your positives to vote on this?
Yes.
We actually spend a fair amount of time on this in the governance committee, and I think the idea absolutely fits in the, with the vision of our school. The biggest question we had was the implementation portion, and if that was, if we could do it effectively, then it would work in the classroom. I think we worked through the issues with the teachers here, right? So if I think we're at the point where it makes sense to do this, if we feel like the division's here, and I like the vision, I really, we've been, some, these are some of the goals we've tried to incorporate from the beginning, so. I think if we feel comfortable, we could move up to vote on this now.
Yeah, I think so.
Since we've already discussed it. And any discussion we can continue before we vote. Any motions to either discuss or to vote on?
I motion to approve the study skills grading policy.
Second.
So all in favor of the proposed study skills grading policy, say yes.
Yes.
All opposed, say no. The voting is unanimous, so we have passed the study skills grading policy. Any other positives?
Well, one thing I have to keep saying over and over, the MRP, teachers stop me in the hallway and say, I love the new MRP. When I go to the coffee machine, I love the new MRP. They're loving the new MRP. And the things that we have in there were things that have been in there for the last couple of years, like look at your kids below a B minus and make contact with parents. That's been in there for the last 3 years. But what's changed is that Rebecca Lucas has automated it, so they don't have to go and run reports. They can just pull it up, the data's there, and they just take action on it. It helped, it's helped me be a better teacher, but a lot because of the work that Rebecca has done. I just get overwhelming positive comments all the time from teachers. I love the new MRP.
Did you want your scores to equal 100 instead of 90, or do you guys like that?
Well, it's weighted, it's category weighting, and so they don't have to equal 100.
You have to be a
4. Yeah, I know.
See if you're on your toes.
No negatives?
No.
Okay. The main thing I wanted to share with from assessment is, and we went over this in the Governance Committee. We have got growth numbers from the state. Calculated those by teacher. So the state hasn't officially published all the numbers yet. I just contacted them to see if they could give us an estimated time when they would have them. And she responded back and said, we looked at your school's growth and it looks phenomenal. Rest easy kind of thing. And I let her know that we felt like our teachers did a really good job focusing on each student. We wanted to reward them for that and wondered how soon we would be able to do that. And so she actually dug out our numbers for us so that we could have this. So that was kind of nice. And just worked through the data and put it in this format so that you can see that by teacher.
What is different state teacher?
So the difference, so you can see, here's our teacher's numbers, here's the state.
This is the difference.
Yeah. And just like I mentioned on the report card too, this is the kind of thing that is kind of nice to keep private.
So overall, we have more positive scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
But
we do have some work, but overall, we've done really well.
Challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, wow, to see language arts. There's a language arts class that's that high.
I know. Yeah, the eighth grade students in math and in English had just phenomenal growth. So we were really
and
proud of them.
Seventh science. Huh?
And seventh grade science, yep. Yep.
We're waiting for that.
Yep. Okay, you want to join?
So a couple of positive things that's going on in Counseling Center right now is we are getting the GPS plans done. In fact, as you look at this first report, the CCRP GPS summary report, the second one, it shows you by grade level. In fact, it shows that we have, out of 469 students, 43% of them have completed their meeting. Not sure why these aren't matching, but the if you go by grade level, you can see that there's 58% have completed their meeting. GPS plan, 58% is completed, but those that are signed is 42%, which means we've gone through the process, but the parent hasn't necessarily sat there and signed them. And then it's also split up by advisor and by grade level, and then also by each advisor by grade level. This year, even though our numbers don't look great, 58% isn't that high. Last year, I think it was 0%. So it's grown quite a bit. So that's one of the positives. If you look on the other side, then we are starting to go for the graduation. So with the GPS plans, according to our calendar events and the way we would like to start seeing them, is that all of our CCRP meetings and GPS plans are done by the end of December, so that come January we can focus on graduation and a lot of the senior things, making sure that the seniors are ready to graduate and ready for a college application and different things. So if you go to the other side with the graduation summary, you can see Suzanne talked a little bit about some of these, but we have 48 seniors scheduled to graduate, 9 juniors scheduled to graduate. 57 out of 57, so every single one of them, the GPS plans have been verified, even though not every single senior has had their meeting like we would like it to be. We have gone through every single one of them and made sure that they are on track to graduate. We just finished that today, so our next step is to go through and say, what is it going to take? So if you look at the next line, then it says there are 25 out of 57, so 44% of them are meeting graduation requirements, which is very low. As we are going through and reviewing the GPS plans and reviewing students, the classes that they're actually in, several of the students are not in the classes that they're supposed to be for second semester, so we need to pull the students in again and make sure that they're in the right classes. Some students need credit recovery, so the ones that have been identified currently of needing credit recovery is 9 students, but you can see there's 25 students that are not meeting graduation requirements. They just need to take a PE class, or they need to just adjust their schedule a little bit. So that's our next step for this next week.
So is it just really simple classes like PE or music or anything like that, or is there anything?
So, most of them are simple classes like that. As we were going through it, and I've got all the details on it. There was a couple of students that we go through, and the student just refuses to take the classes. They think they know better than us, and they take what they want to take. And we go through, as I was going through it, and I'm just like, you know, you're not meeting these graduation requirements. So it's then going to be a meeting to discuss what are we going to do to help these students and help them to understand, no, this is required for graduation. And then there was also, as we were going through it, there was a question on music and leadership and the way our original charter was written versus the way it has been put. And I forget the name of the new document that was finalized and approved by the state. The original charter said that students will have 4 credits of music to graduate and take it every year, 4 credits of music. Same thing with math, leadership, each of these different classes. But the way it was written in that agreement, in that other form, it says they will take it every year, which is very vague.
I don't think it was changed. I'll go get it.
Okay.
So on your other, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt. My question was on your kids that are refusing to take the classes that you're suggesting.
Mm-hmm.
Have we contacted the parents? Are we getting?
Well, I just got that stuff done today.
Oh, okay.
And so I am looking at it, and I'm talking to other people, and they just know this is what I need to do, and they just take what they want to take. I now will be pulling in every single student that's not in line to graduate, make sure that we do whatever it takes. But the question that I have that has come up, one or two students in particular that say, no, I don't want to take this, because the agreement says they will take music every year. What does that mean? They will take music every year. The original charter said it'll be 4 years of, or 4 credits. So do we say, well, you've had music every year, even though it was only a 4 credit each year, does that really mean a charter? Does that really mean graduation? So that needs to be really fleshed out and defined and approved so that I can uphold our Vanguard requirements.
Do we have a calendar that makes it so that you start this procedure back in the fall when we can make a difference?
Well, the GPS plans, if every single senior has been met with, so if you look at the other side, on our seniors, so the second column, it shows that 50% of our seniors have been met with. Mm-hmm. Now, if you look at the one under mine, it says 106 because I met with more than mine.
Mm-hmm.
But 100, all of my seniors have been met with, because the policy is that you start with your seniors, mm-hmm. and you work with them first, then your juniors, then your sophomores. It hasn't necessarily happened across the board.
So all of the seniors that have been met with that are supposed to graduate this year? Every single one?
Not every senior has been met with. That's my point. If every senior has been met with by the end of December, then their schedule should already be accurate. So now I'm going in and looking at graduation, and we're saying, okay, we have not met. Now these students haven't met because their GPS plans and their meetings have not happened. We're going back and fixing it. That's why it's so critical that those happen before December.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Can we?
Mm-hmm. And the seniors are supposed to be done by the end of September. That's what it is in our schedule, in our calendar.
Specifically, as the task would be to get a calendar that sets the dates throughout the year.
And then you have to follow up with the other counselors to make sure.
And that is something we're putting down, those procedures of even the review process and getting the whole app put together so that we don't have this problem in the future.
And then someone got to slide.
Yeah, and that's what I thought. Well, that's the question, is do I take care of that, or do I now focus on graduation, because seniors have to happen even though not every student has been met with.
For sure, you focus on seniors first, foremost priority, and then after you're done with the seniors, and you move on to the other ones to make sure that you get
100%. Yeah, and I've decided that I'm meeting with at least one family. Now, when I say family, that might mean 3 or 4 students each week while I'm doing this, so that I'm not leaving it behind, but that I'm still able to to get these other things 23
done. 23 seniors I haven't met with before, 24.
Yeah. And so we've recently gotten a secretary that's going through and organizing the files so that they're all the same and that we can make sure that everything is happening.
So when you ask the question, who's going to meet with those seniors? Suzanne, Kathleen, whoever's.
Meet with them to make sure that they're getting their...
Yes,
yeah, okay. It's typically the advising office with GPS funds. And then the scheduling team is supposed to make sure that they're looking at those GPS plans to make sure those classes are matching what's in the plan. So that's typically the process that should happen. And I just got a packet submitted that is going over that scheduling process.
So you're reviewing the all of the stuff at the scheduling and the GPS plans?
Yeah, this, like Joni said, this is something that they had just finished. She and Andrea are working on that today, most of the day.
So is this
so I haven't seen it yet.
Okay. So you'll fix it.
We're working on it, and like
but
I said,
this is going to come out more often, right?
So oh yeah,
when they graduate.
I've actually this here I've given to our board and as our summary. This has actually come every single month to our board. But this one here, we just barely got done because this starts in January after all students are registered for their second semester classes and grades are posted for first semester. Then that's when in my calendar is to go through and flush everything out. And it should be already correct if every senior has been met with and all schedules are accurate based off GPS plans.
Right.
Then it shouldn't look like this. And so now that's my focus right now is making sure that this gets taken care of. And so today we got it all done, reviewed, now it's time to fix.
So is there gonna be enough time, because it says there's 32 students that aren't meeting the requirements, right?
Yeah, most of them are things like PE
breakfast.
And music, and yeah, that'll take me probably a week to get it done.
And a lot of them are music, and in years past, or in the past few semesters, we've allowed the classes like Art 1080, photography, digital media arts potentially,
yeah.
If it's not being counted as to count as that fine arts, that would replace the requirement for the music every, you know, the 4 credits of music. And then I did review the Exhibit A. They actually, she wouldn't change specific data to our charter without us doing an amendment request.
Mm-hmm.
So what's in there is what was in the original. It doesn't have the details that says, you know, they're going to take
4 credits.
These credits,
yeah.
This number of credits. But our charter does say that the students will complete 24 to 27 credits. The state requires 24. So I think that we're still in compliance if we're making sure that there's something going on in the fine arts arena in replacement of that other. And then we've also said that if they graduate as an 11th grader, then they fulfill the requirements of taking music or math or science
and those
every
are wage
year.
And that's not
yeah.
So
in this.
That's kind of how it would work. And when I was looking at some of those seniors before, I think it's like Joni said, there's a quarter credit of PE here or a half credit of music there or something is what they're missing. The credit recovery ones are the ones that are concerned.
Okay. So you guys are on top of it.
So
yeah.
Next meeting, then all
next meeting will be done.
It'll
be 100%.
Are we going to amend the charter then?
It's been up for suggestion that maybe we do so that we can better clarify that. When we were first doing the Exhibit A, I remember asking Rebecca Cisneros, can we move it so that it says that they will take this anyway, so it would better clarify that this could replace that or whatever. And she said, anything like that, if you want to do that, you do need to write an amendment. Those are small amendments and don't usually require the full 18 months. They can usually be reviewed and approved in a few months or within the year.
So if the board feels like that that's what we want to do, and maybe if Joni has looked at it and is she's going
so
through that
like
review
to
process,
put together a proposal.
Maybe she could put together a proposal, what should it look like so that we can be in compliance.
That's good. If you can bring in a proposal in the next, for the next meeting, it's really good.
And we're actually going through a review of the curriculum at a higher level, but I think some of the apps that are coming online, hopefully real soon, we'll probably show some of those either deficiencies of our vision or things we need to add to it. And so there's information that's coming online in the next 2 or 3 months that could actually help us if we wanted to change that charter and the vision of our school. So, and the world changes every day. So. Okay, any more questions? We've gone a little over on the that. Is there any other discussion? Thank you very much. We'll go back to item 6, the fee schedule. We need to have some discussion on that. Did you want to start us off on that?
Mostly, I will be sending out, I knew there were a lot of policies to review for this meeting. I just wanted to talk about the process that the state has changed. I'll be sending out a copy of the USBE model policy for school fees that shows it's very detailed, and it even has some things that are suggested steps on how we would create that policy. And I'll send out our current policy, our current fee schedule, and then the model policy so that we can see what we need to look at. It does need to be approved in the March meeting. The deadline is April 1st, so it says that it needs to be, the fee schedule needs to be board approved in a regular board meeting. So that would mean it would need to be the March meeting in order to meet that April 1st deadline. With that, there are 2 open public comment meetings. So we did send a message out to parents to let them know that the board meeting is tonight and they could have come to provide comment. I've given my email that they can provide comment or input that way. I sent the same documents to the parents that you will be receiving so that they can see and understand what the process is. The textbook fee, we already did take that off with this current year's fee schedule. The USBE is requiring it to be off in the year 2022-23. Trying to get those numbers right. So that was a requirement that was going to have to be taken off of all fee schedules for all schools, but they were giving some flexibility. But last year it was decided that we would go ahead and take that off. So we just need to look through, and any fee that we're going to charge needs to be posted on that. We can amend it after the fact if we decide we need to add something. But it needs to go through the same process where we have 2 periods of parent comment options and then could be approved in the regular meeting again. So I just wanted to make sure that everybody had that information, and I mean, we had a lot of policy to go over, so I figured I'd wait to send that out until after so we could better review it over the next month and be ready to have a vote in March.
Okay. So I think the main comment I would say is just make sure there's a lot of communication, and if you feel like the communication to the parents or anybody isn't effective.
So I'll make sure it goes into our newsletters and to the other things as well, and on the to make sure that information is available.
Will you also give it to the PTSO?
Yes.
As well?
Yeah, and then I can...
It needs to be put on our agenda for next month as well for
discussion.
I'll make sure to compile any comments that come in and share them with the board so that you can see the comments or
and
back.
I wonder if I would let them know that the option to come to the board meeting.
We did in the message that went out. And we send it via text and email on our K-12 systems.
It seemed like we got them.
So that way, I did let them know they could email or contact administration, or they could come to the board meeting with a 3-minute comment prepared. It's there the January or February.
And we do have over 80% of our students who qualify for free and reduced lunch, which means that they are also have those fees waived. So that may explain why they're, you know, because it doesn't necessarily impact anyone who has that fee waiver.
Yeah.
So anyway, but we did send it out to everyone.
Okay, any more discussion on that? We move to the next item. We have one more policy to approve. That's the Gandy Scout policy. We'll ask Maria if she'll present it.
So I sent this out through email as well, and I'm hoping this is a little more clear. The highlighted yellow is the only portion of the grading scale that I'm proposing that we change, and the main reason is to align with the grading scale that Slick and Snow use.
I think it makes sense. Any discussion?
It's pretty simple.
Very straightforward.
Yeah. I motion to approve this policy.
All in favor of approving the new grading policy and procedure, say yes.
Yes.
All opposed, say no. Okay, it's been approved. That's the last item on the agenda. Okay, all in favor of closing the meeting, say yes.
Yes.
All opposed, say no. Meeting has been closed. Thank you.